I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. One of the things we do on Central Standard is host storytelling events. They're super chill, and they offer the same kind of candid reflections on life that we try to highlight every day on the air, only listeners are right there in the room with the guests. The most recent of these events happened right before Labor Day. We heard stories about life on the job from people in a whole range of professions, starting with me. Your friendly neighborhood talk show host.
I host a talk show, so that means that I ask questions. I analyze everything to death. And that side of me does not always just chill out when I'm off the air, which is unfortunate, but true. And what I'm often doing when I'm not at work is mothering a small child. As a mom, I sing a lot of songs. The same ones over and over again. And don't get me wrong on this, some of my favorite moments as a parent so far have happened while singing. I wouldn't trade it for the world, but I have heard many of these songs like a bazillion times at this point. A major favorite in our household is I've Been Working on the Railroad. Who here knows that song? Yeah? So we could do a sing-along, right? I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away. Stop right there. You sound great. My stopping you has, I just really want you to think about the line you just said. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away. On about time bazillion and 33, the talk show part of my brain kicked in and was like, I'm sorry, what did you just say? Did you just say I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away? Because I find it highly unlikely that anyone has ever worked on the railroad for that particular reason. At first, I just dealt with this personal hang-up by telling a lot of jokes around the house, which I'm sure everybody enjoyed. But I really did want to know the answer to my questions, such as, what is that line about, and how did that song ever achieve mass popularity despite what is clearly a huge misunderstanding about the nature of hard labor? So eventually that talk show side of my brain totally took over.
I think it's not a song about labor, which may be bad for you for me to say, but it's what I think. It's a play song. It's a pretend song.
So that is Daniel Wolfe. He's the author of a book about folk music called Grown Up Anger, and he has some insights into this song, which he says probably is not a work song.
The work songs we know mostly had a heavy beat. If you had to keep driving stakes in a railroad, it was nice to do them in a rhythm and have a song to sing while you were doing it.
So this makes total sense. I've never thought about this before, but that song has like four different rhythms that switch up like very manically, and it would make you crazy to try and work to that song. He also says this isn't a spiritual.
Well, it doesn't have the sort of spiritual uplift. It's much more gimmicky.
Fair enough. So what is this song? Daniel Wolfe thinks it's a minstrel song.
The beginning part of the song, I've Been Working on the Railroad, the first evidence anybody has of it is in the 1890s, which is late, and is in a Princeton College songbook, which leads one to believe it didn't have a whole lot to do with work.
In case you did not catch this, I've Been Working on the Railroad, a song about working on the railroad, was written by students at Princeton University. Or if not that, it was adapted by those students based on a song that had already existed, but just hadn't been written down yet. Either way, I'm still not totally clear about what this line, I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away, is about.
It depends what you think happened. If it's in fact an African American railroad worker who started off singing this, and he's singing just to pass the time away, he's clearly making fun of the job and his boss and the whole thing, because he ain't working just to pass the time away. he's doing a hard job to make some money. And so, you know, boss, I'm just working here to pass the time away, which isn't the equivalent of saying, you know, screw off. On the other hand, if it's a written song, either in the 1850s or at Princeton later on, then the song, the edge probably goes the other way. It's kind of making fun of African Americans who are doing this work, and it's sort of sarcastic that way. It's to make the work look like it's unimportant and easy, which we know it wasn't.
Dang. Okay, well, aside from making me really not sure how I feel about continuing to sing this song for a three-year-old, Daniel's explanation really made me crave a more personal story, a clearer picture of what railroad work would have actually been like, and that's what led me to David Lopez. David Lopez is the son of Manny Lopez, who started Manny's Restaurant on Southwest Boulevard. Before he started that restaurant, Manny Lopez was a second-generation railroad worker here in Kansas City. And his son, David Lopez, is going to tell that story now.
We'll get right to David's story, but we've got to take a short break first. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. When we left off, we were just about to hear a story from David Lopez, whose dad opened up a restaurant called Manny's on Southwest Boulevard. David told his dad's story at the Record Bar during a live storytelling event put on by the Central Standard crew. The event took place right before Labor Day, and all the stories were about work, life on the job. Here's David Lopez with the story of Manny Lopez.
14 years old in the 50s, my father had zero education, he had zero money, he had nothing. Everything he had to fight for it. And I don't say that in like an expressive way, I say that in the literal sense. He had to fight every day. My father would later on tell me in thousands of conversations that we would have, he would tell me, son, nothing in this life that is worth having comes free. You got to earn it. And he learned that. And he learned it very, very young. Not very well educated. Went to Ward High School, got thrown out of Ward High School. Barely graduated from Argentine High School. But somehow he kept on working. For some reason, Manny Lopez kept finding a way to grind, to push, and to not make excuses for himself. Because even though he didn't know it, there were a few moments when maybe the sun would hit his face and he'd smile and he realized that he was destined for more. My father, at a very young age, got married. Uh-oh. Got pregnant. Uh-oh. And it was a very difficult situation. What's my father going to do? Now he's got children. Now he's got a wife. Now he's got responsibilities. Where's he going to go? He tried to tell his father, Dad, what am I going to do? You know what his dad told him? He said, son, I gave you everything I'm going to give you, and that's my last name. By himself, alone, backed into a corner, with people to take care of and people that depended on him. My grandfather worked at the Santa Fe Railroad in Argentine, Kansas. And as cold as my grandfather sounded just a moment ago, he got my dad a job. So my dad started working at the railroad every day. Different job here, different job there. Lopez, go here. Lopez, go there. Here, there, back and forth. It was cold. The hours were long. The steel, the metal, the gravel, the dirt, nonstop. But what we don't realize, and what he realized at a later age, was that he was learning something. He was learning what he needed to do to take care of his family, to take care of his children. He was learning to put his own wants and his own needs aside, and to take care of those that depended on him and needed him more than anything. My grandfather, J.D., Joe Lopez, he was tough. And he had to be, because nobody did anything for him either. He would take burritos and tamales that my grandmother would make to work. And boy, I tell you what, they loved J.D.'s burritos. So he started bringing extra burritos, extra tamales, and they couldn't get enough of it. And my father saw that. He saw these guys working their butts off every single day, 10-hour shifts, nonstop, grueling work. But when Joe Lopez bought those burritos and pulled them out of his canister, he'd see the smiles on these guys' faces. So maybe he started to know, maybe he started to understand that the key to what he was going to become was the warmth, the love. That is something that Manny Lopez, he got a little taste of that, and he never let go. He never let go. So one day comes along, all these days bleeding to the next, bleeding to the next. One day my father gets caught between two boxcars. Boom. He gets shot out. They take him to the hospital. His insides are just completely torn up. My father had hundreds of surgeries. He would tell me those are the worst days of his life because he couldn't do anything. He couldn't fix himself. He was stuck. Who was taking care of his family? It was an uncertainty that drove him crazy for years. He would wake up with nightmares. Somehow, some way, Manny Lopez walks out of that hospital. And Manny Lopez makes a choice. He says, I'm done. This railroad life is not for me. So as the years pass on, he gets to a bar called Westport One. Westport One was the place to be in the 60s and in the 70s. And Manny Lopez was the man. There was no cooler person than Manny Lopez at Westport One. He loved talking to the people. He loved learning about their families. He loved serving them. He loved making them smile by telling them a joke. He loved it. He took pride in it because it was warm. And as those years go by and all the success that occurs for my father, it still wasn't enough. His marriage fell apart. He was alone. Once again, he felt like he was back at square one. But because of the work ethic, because of that blue-collar mentality, because of the grind that he did as a young man at the railroad, he made it work. One night on an evening, this beautiful woman walks in. Her name is Vivian Lundgren. It was just love at first sight. So now my father has Vivian by his side. Now he's got nothing to lose. There is no more fear. He's already faced death. He's already had his heart broken. He's already been alone. He goes, gets a $27,000 loan at 25% interest rate. He goes in downtown Kansas City. He picks Viv up. Viv, you got to come with me. God, you got to come with me. I found it. The energy that he had. So he drives her down. Takes her down to the boulevard, down to 207 Southwest Boulevard. She gets out and she starts crying. She's like, oh my God, no one's going to come down here. I'm going to have to teach forever. My dad put his hands on his hips and he looked up at that building and he had the biggest smile on his face because he could see it. He knew it. And the rest is history. And I always tell people, they always ask me, God, what a great success story that you have with your father. It's not a success story. It's a love story. It's a love story between Manny and Vivian Lopez, between Manny and his family, and between Manny and Kansas City. For the few of you in the audience that got a chance to interact with my father, boy, there wasn't a stranger to him, was there? He loved everybody. He didn't care who you were. He didn't care if you were the mayor of Kansas City or if you were a taxi driver. He was going to be your best friend, and he was going to make you feel welcome because it was warm, because it was loving, because it was the right thing to do. My father and I would talk all the time, and he was better to me than I probably deserved, and I miss him every day because he was my compa. We were together. He was my partner. And one thing he told me, he looked at me and he said, I got him all fooled, Dave. I'm just a poor boy from Argentine, Kansas. And I always had the railroad.
That was David Lopez remembering his dad, Manny Lopez, during a live storytelling event last month. Up next, we have a story from the mayor of Kansas City, Missouri. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. Let's get back to that storytelling event at the Record Bar, where Mayor Quentin Lucas was one of a handful of Kansas Cityans who told stories from their work lives. The professions ranged from circus arts to construction work. Quentin Lucas was there to remind us that no matter how big or important your job is, you got to start where we all start, with that humbling first day.
Well, hello. Oh, gosh, I'm ready. Hello, everybody. Are we doing all right tonight? So my name is Quentin. I just started a new government job. You know, you go through the paperwork, you do all that sort of stuff. As you all know, back on June 18th, I have this thing with rain. It was pouring rain that evening, and I go in like a nervous Nelly and all that sort of stuff. And then, right, I watch the news, and they say, Quentin Lucas won. And I was almost living as if I was not that actual Quentin Lucas. And so I'm just operating like a robot, giving speeches, delivering different things. And then you kind of say, and I hope this isn't live, but I say, oh, shit, I won, right? I actually have to come up with stuff now. And so then fast forward 6 weeks, and everybody's like, are you relaxing? Are you getting time off? Are you actually coming up with your 100-day strategy? The answer to every question is no, right? All you're doing is reacting, responding to calls, having your mother still tell you, good God, you wore a wrinkled suit, right? All of those things happen along the while. So then finally we get to Inauguration Day, August 1st, and there's kind of this trend. Rain again is forecast. And I thought, wow, Alanis Morissette told me, right, isn't it ironic? Although it really isn't ironic, but it is like rain on your Inauguration Day or something of that sort. So I wake up that morning and there's something new. If you're watching this speech closely, you'll see two men in suits to the side of me who don't smile much. And so the amazing thing is I get picked up from my apartment where I still lived at about 5:30 a.m. And although I'm a morning person, and maybe some of you are morning people, there's a difference between waking up and doing your own thing and like having to wake up and really be like live. And so I then go through the television interviews. And the amazing thing is, right, my inauguration starts at 8:30 a.m. So after the TV interviews, I then run into my council colleagues and realize that we're actually trying to get a few simple things passed that morning. One of those simple things are the rules that will govern the next 4 years of city council. So while I wanted to do more interviews and handshakes, what I really was doing instead was on the phone with my good colleague, Catherine Shields, talking about the finite rules from the 70s and 80s of city council. So we go through all of that. We then start our inauguration. It's inside, it's crowded, it's exciting. And then the darndest thing actually happens, which is I'm like, oh my gosh, am I ready for my speech? This odd thing happens, like your first day of kindergarten. I was like, can I actually deliver it? I look out in this room, there are probably 300 people there, and I'm like, just start reading. And so then I just do. And the darndest thing is you go through this campaign and so often you're actually this programmed robot. You know your answers. You've prepared so much. But then you actually look out in the crowd and it was as if I was 6 years old. I saw my mother sitting there. I saw some of my cousins. And they were so happy. And they looked so excited. And I thought, good Lord, how did I get here? Right? Do I really belong? Will this dream end in a second? And the thing that happens is, it doesn't. But that night, one of the promises both my opponent and I made, because if ever you've run for office and people ask you a question, it's kind of like an offer you can't refuse. They're like, will you come to my house and mow my lawn? And I'm like, sure. And they're like, will you go personally fill a pothole with toothpaste? Absolutely. And so their proposal was, will you actually spend the night in affordable housing or low-income housing somewhere in Kansas City to see what life is like for those who live in less fortunate circumstances. And I said, not only will I do that was pretty much the first 16 years or so of my life. And so I went to stay. And I'll be honest, are we all friends, right? We are. We're all close. Thank you. Thank you to my 7 friends. The rest of you must live in Olathe. So nevertheless, ooh. And I thought we had a border war truce. So I agreed to stay in the housing. And the first interesting thing was that my nice police detail, these nice gentlemen who now go on dates with me and football games and all that sort of stuff. If you ever want a lot of company and a way to avoid awkwardness, bring 2 police officers with you. And so I get dropped off at the apartment I'll be staying at, and they say, "Are you sure?" And I look out the window, and I'm kind of like, "I'm not sure at all." But then I say, "Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I'm good. I know the people." So then I walk in. There's this Kansas City Star reporter. There are some other folks. There are people taking pictures. I sit down. I have a nice conversation with a woman who's about 42, her 20-year-old son, and we start to chat about the world. The Kansas City Star reporter eventually leaves. She writes what I thought was a wonderful piece. And then the real fun starts. So it's about 10:30 p.m. I'm incredibly exhausted. I'd probably slept 3 hours for about the week in advance. And the lady, and this is where we come into the story, she said, "You don't mind my smoking, right?" And I said, "Oh, well, I'm still on campaign trail. I mind nothing." So, of course. So she starts to kind of chain smoke cigarettes. So then my voice is starting to sound like I'm Vito Corleone. And I'm just saying, "I don't know really about the housing." She said, "Do you smoke marijuana?" I said, "You know, ma'am, no, you're not going to stump me right now. I'm against it." So she was very nice, a very nice woman from Kentucky who said, "Well, we have extra if you need some." Then finally, somebody just walks in, a man with a beard, a lot of tattoos, and he's like, "How you doing?" And it's weird. It's like a reverse Sesame Street, where Oscar the Grouch is smoking weed with you and a family. And so then we are just sitting there, and Jim and the son and the mom are all sitting around. They're smoking weed and talking about affordable housing. And Jim, the random dude from Riverside, says, "Do you want a root beer float?" And I just said, "Now, isn't this just the darndest thing?" So there's the root beer float, there's the marijuana, then a 4-year-old comes downstairs. And then I said, "You know what? It's about midnight. I'm going to go to sleep." I tried my mightiest to sleep about 2.5 hours. I was able to. And then at 4 a.m., there was lots of cigarette smoke, right? Everything was there. And I was like, "I have to actually get outside." And so I then go outside for a breath of fresh air. And the one thing you don't want to hear when you're looking for anonymity is, "Hey, that's the mayor." "Hey, yes, it's me. I'm just hanging out in your neighborhood at 4:30 a.m., just walking around. What are you up to?" And then I made a few more friends in the neighborhood. We were having just a delightful time. And I said, "Wait, you know, this is the first day, but I think I can get a handle on that police detail." So they came and picked me up at 5 a.m., and I got the chance to say, not only did I spend a nice night that was interesting on my inauguration day, I think I had the most unique inauguration of any mayor in America. Thank you all so very much.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and that was quite a performance from our new mayor. But everyone has a story. We'll conclude the hour with a one-woman sideshow act and a construction worker. But the important thing is, Central Standard is always about all the Kansas Citians out there working hard at whatever it is they do to make this city what it is and what it could be. That includes you, so thanks. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we've been listening to stories from Kansas Citians in every line of work who originally stood up and told their stories at a live event at the Record Bar. I want to get back to those stories now. Martika Daniels used to have a steady job at a veterinary lab as a parasitologist, so bonus points for having a job title nobody understands. But unexpected events converged and gave her the chance to pursue a childhood dream, start her own business. I'm going to let her be the one to tell you about it. Here's Martika Daniels.
A few years back, I was meeting my accountant for the first time. And like any business owner who's just starting their business, I had a stack of papers. I walk in and I drop them on her desk and I just throw a ton of questions at her. She's like, "Okay. It looks like you've got all of the right documents to get your business registered, so I've got some questions for you. The first thing, what is your business about? What are the services you sell?" And I say, "Well, I'm a full-time entertainer. I sell shows. Shows focused on fire, circus acts, escapology, and sideshow stunts. So basically, I hula hoop with barbed wire and I swallow swords for a living." At that point, she stops typing, stops all paperwork, slowly looks at me with looks of curiosity, fear, and then back to curiosity. And of course she asked, how do you do that? And how did you get started in doing this? And it started with me growing up traveling. My dad was in the Air Force, so we traveled frequently. While we were living in Germany, we were vacationing in Europe. Of course, I had the opportunity to travel around Europe. We were in Rome for vacation. And while in Rome, I saw a busker for the first time. And a busker is a street performer, if you don't know what that is. He was juggling torches on fire, gracefully and completely without fear. I was amazed, and I had to learn everything about circus arts after that. I found books, and I read all sorts of things, and it was my sudden passion, and a passion I kept for many, many years. But I didn't actually take up circus arts at a young age. For me, I thought it wasn't that accessible for me. All the books I found, there was very little people that were doing circus acts that looked like me. So I put that on the back burner for a while, and instead I took up gymnastics, I did a variety of dance classes, and sports. I didn't come back to circus arts until about my college years. When I was 19, I met an international performer who was based in Kansas City, luck would have it. I started taking classes, and I practiced daily, and over the years, I eventually started picking up gigs. From teaching at a local circus school weekly to performing across the country at festivals. All while performing and traveling, I got my veterinary technician degree. As I was working in a parasitologist in a corporate lab, which was a dream job for a veterinary technician straight out of college, sadly, my mom passed away. Within the same year, the lab I was working at got bought out and sold. So I was dealing with a pit of anxiety and depression. And for me, I had no idea I was going to be doing this full time. I had no idea I was going to be doing stunts full time. Stunts was my light at the end of a dark tunnel. I thought if I could be a fire eater, I could get out of bed for the day. If I could walk on glass, I could go to the grocery store. If I could literally break out of chains, maybe I would have control over my life. But instead of going back to a corporate lab, I decided to use my unemployment and start a small business.
That was 4 years ago. Since then, Martika's traveled internationally with her signature act, which, again, I'll let her explain.
I took your average hula hoop, and I thought, how could I make it even more dangerous? So I took that hoop, and I added barbed wire to it to make it into a stunt. It's really hard to explain what a barbed wire hula hoop is, but I can show it to you all today, if you would like to do that.
So at this point in the show, Martika brought a volunteer up on stage. His name was Nick, and he was shaking as Martika blew up a balloon for him to hold and then popped it with her barbed wire hula hoop. That was Martika Daniels of Kansas City. And finally, we're going to conclude this broadcast the same way we ended the live show at the Record Bar with a construction worker poet by the name of Eric Borden. We all build Kansas City with our labor. He literally builds the city, like, doing construction. Here he is reciting the poem that got him a massive YouTube following. It's called Ditch Diggers.
You say the world needs ditch diggers, and that statement's true enough. But if you're saying it because you think you're better than us, then with you I've got a grudge. For we are every creed and color. We are woman and we are man. We fall into what society calls blue collar, and we are proud to wear that brand. Our hard hats are a resume, tattooed with stickers, timelines of who we are and where we've been, what we've built with our machines, our skills, our hands. For everyone is built to do something, and we were built to build this world. We're doing what we were designed to do since we were just little boys and girls. Yeah, everyone's built to do something, and we were built to build this world. We're doing what we dreamt of doing since we were just little boys and girls. So when you're heading down the road and you see those operators cutting grade on those big machines, and those iron workers cutting, welding, shaping, tying those skeletons of steel, those laborers, those carpenters getting ready for that big pour, take that bridge you're traveling across from three lanes to four. And the crane operators who will pick and pluck and place and set with precision and with ease while their work and sometimes their office sways upon the breeze. The linemen in their bucket trucks and the excavators out putting in the pipe. The plumbers who get the good stuff in and the bad stuff out. And the HVAC techs who give you the comfort in your office and in your house. From the high lines to the pipelines, we build, repair, service the infrastructure that fuels your life. From the Golden Gate to the Brooklyn Bridge, we have built the monuments and the buildings that make up the silhouette of the skyline in the city in which you live. From the highways to the byways and the runways to the driveways, these things we build well, they'll still stand long after we are gone. A testament to our passion. Do our part. Keep this country moving on. And some of us, well, we're born into it. It is synonymous with our family name. It is bred into us through generations, and it pulses through our veins. Others, we're those kids that played with Lincoln logs and Tonka trucks and all the light toys, and we grew to be men. We grew to be women who knew construction wasn't just for boys. Some earned their skill, and for this country they did proudly serve. To them I say no higher respect could one truly earn. And the reason why we do what we do, well, it is simple to us, but it is too complex for passerbys to figure. So I ask them to ask themselves, how does it all get done? How does this world get bigger? And the irony is, the answer is, we rest on the shoulders of all of them ditch diggers.
That was Eric Borden. I'm Gina Kaufman. And Central Standard gets built every day by a team of hardworking people. Melody Rowell, intern Noah Taborda, Ann Knigendorf, and Aviva Okeson-Haberman. We had help today from Mike Russo and Matthew Long Middleton. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer.